Ave, and welcome to Emperors of Rome, a Roman history podcast from La Trobe University. I'm your host, Matt Smith, and with me today is Dr. Kaelin Davenport, Senior Lecturer in Roman History at Macquarie University. This is episode CXIII, Fratricidal Discord. The death of Septimius Severus left a strong line of succession, with two sons ready to take control of the empire. There was no love lost between Caracalla and Geta, and it would be the Roman Empire that bore the scars of their relationship. Here's Kaelin Davenport.
Last time we saw Septimius Severus and his two sons, Antoninus and Geta, who were campaigning in North Britain when Septimius Severus died in February 211 at York, in the north of what is now England, from a case of gout. So this meant that he now left his two sons to succeed him, Antoninus and Geta, and Septimius Severus told them to enrich the soldiers and forget about everyone else.
Mm. Well, that's advice that somebody will take to heart. So they are quite young men at this point. They're close in age. Mm.
Caracalla born 188 and Geta born 1 year later in 189. So they're in their early 20s, but there's only a year separating them, despite the fact that through all his life, Antoninus has been preferred to Geta. Mm. I mean, he was made Augustus 10 years before Geta was. You would think what kind of psychological impact that would make on the younger brother.
But it was also done this way. He was finally made Augustus as well because a check and balance was needed on Antoninus.
Yeah, Geta was promoted to Augustus in 209, about the same time as the British campaign started. And while Antoninus goes campaigning with Septimius Severus, Geta is left in charge of the civilian administration in Britain and probably also some of the imperial correspondence which is coming there. So he's definitely trying to prepare both sons to take the throne after his death.
Okay, so at this point we should, given that these next few episodes are going to concentrate on him, call Antoninus by his better well-known name, which we haven't done at all during the Septimius Severus podcasts. So Antoninus now becomes
Caracalla.
Caracalla.
Which is a nickname. Mm. Listeners might remember that Caligula was a nickname for Gaius Caesar, meaning Little Boots.
Little Boots, yes.
Yes, and so Caracalla gets his nickname after a Gallic hooded cloak, which is either called in ancient sources a caracallus or a caracalla. Mm. So it's a long cloak, which Cassius Dio says that Caracalla invented himself. He designed it with the hood, and it's good for when you're out in the wilds of Northern Europe campaigning. And it says something about the sort of emperor that Caracalla wanted to be. He wanted to be a fellow soldier.
Mm. Sorry, where did you say, who was it who said this nickname? That was Dio.
Oh, Cassius Dio, yes.
And,
yeah.
And Dio actively calls him Antoninus still, though, in his biographies?
Antoninus occasionally, but also Caracalla, and a third name, Turaltas, which was the name of an ugly gladiator. Very pejorative nickname, and that was also supposed to be used by the people of Rome as well.
Mm, okay. Between the other biographies that we've got of him, say of Herodian, and I guess to a lesser extent, not that we'll be referring to it a lot, but the Augustan histories.
Yes.
What name are they calling him at the time?
Antoninus or Caracalla.
Okay.
As well.
So it gets a bit interchangeable then.
Yes, yeah. Marcus Aurelius Antoninus is his name, which he was given by Septimius Severus to consolidate their links with the Antonine dynasty.
Mm.
But in antiquity, as today, it gets a bit confusing when you have all these emperors called Marcus Aurelius Antoninus.
Yeah, we need to differentiate it a bit. So,
yes,
yeah.
So Caracalla has gone down in history as the nickname which we all call him by.
And Antoninus is a name that really hangs on. I guess we'll talk about that in later emperors, I suppose. Just a little bit of a background then. You said he was Augustus for about 10 years at this point.
Yeah, from 197, 198 probably, yeah. He's made Augustus. It's quite interesting that Caracalla actually falsified his birthday to 186 rather than 188 to make him seem older, much older than Geta, because there was only a year between them. People paid notice to things like this in antiquity.
Their sole rule begins in 211, and they need to resolve the war that they've got going on in Britain to some extent and extract themselves from that situation to get back to Rome. But it's essentially just a drawing out at that point. They leave the situation unresolved?
Yeah, it's very swiftly wrapped up. They need to go back to Rome for the funeral of Septimius Severus to deify him and to really to take control of the government and administration there. So there's the withdrawal from the area that we might call Scotland.
And how is power divided between them at that point?
Well, Cassius Dio says that Caracalla really takes the reins and tries to push Geta out of the way, but they are nominally co-Augusti, they're joint rulers. But he does start to try and change the power structure of the administration, so he dismisses Papinianus, who's the Praetorian prefect with them in Britain. So this is the emperor's right-hand man. And Septimius Severus had actually commended Caracalla and Geta to Papinianus's care. So by removing him, Caracalla is really trying to establish himself as his own man. He also dismisses Fabius Chilo, who is the prefect of the city, probably the most senior senatorial position. Caracalla had often called him father beforehand. He was trying to keep Caracalla and Geta together, but Caracalla now dismisses him from office.
Does he keep his family on check?
He tries to bring new supporters into place. So we have the extended Syrian branch of the household who's related to Julia Domna, his mother. For example, Sextus Varius Marcellus, an equestrian who is married to Caracalla's cousin, Julia Sormias, is promoted to acting Praetorian prefect and urban prefect there as well. So he's starting to move other relatives into place there. Mm. And of course, Julia Domna, who is the mother of Caracalla and Geta, is going to play a major role as a peacemaker between the two young men to try and get them to work together.
Yeah. We're saying that Caracalla made these decisions, but Geta would have been involved in some capacity, maybe.
It's really difficult to know. Yeah. We know that Geta dies by the end of 211. Spoiler alert. Sorry. So a lot of this is written, a lot of the narrative is written with Caracalla as the prime agent there. So we hear, for example, how Plautilla, Caracalla's wife, who's been exiled since 205, since the downfall of her father, Fulvius Plautianus, the Praetorian prefect. She's been exiled on the island of Lipara. She is now killed as well, along with her brother. So these are decisions that probably Caracalla is going to make. As well. He even kills a legendary charioteer, Euprepes. Chariot racing was big business in ancient Rome. And
he's heavily invested in it.
Oh,
he loves it.
Very much so. You know, it was a young man's sport.
Sign of a bad emperor, but...
Yes. If you like the races, you are likely to be evil. Caracalla's a big fan of the blues, so there's various factions, the blues and the greens, and he kills a famous charioteer from the other faction. It would be like a new prime minister coming to power and killing an AFL player from the team which he hated or something like that.
So, wow.
Or an American football player for our US listeners.
And he never gets remarried for somebody who should be concerned with dynasty.
Mm. And this is really puzzling, the fact that Caracalla, young man in his 20s, doesn't get married again. And if he's going to, you know, get rid of Geta and wants to establish his own dynasty, the first thing he should be looking to is to marry and establish a new line. But he doesn't. And this is a source of rumours about his sexuality, which we will see in future episodes. There is rumours about incest with his mother, him becoming impotent. There's various stories around Caracalla's sex life, which suggest there was rumour and speculation about why he didn't actually get married. He may have thought he had plenty of time.
Yeah. So when he and Geta returned to Rome, their priority was their father's funeral.
Yes.
Make a spectacle of that, make yourself known as the new emperor. So tell me about that and just tell me how they were functioning when they first got back to Rome.
They're united, they enter the city together, and we really owe this account to the work of Herodian, who gives a really detailed narrative of Septimius Severus' funeral, the effigy of Septimius Severus lying in state outside the palace, and they're being escorted into the forum by the senatorial and equestrian orders, the speeches, the songs, and then the procession to the Campus Martius, where the pyre is erected. And you can see this pyre, it's sort of like a, almost looks a bit like a Tower of Babel on Roman coins that feature it. It's really a multi-tiered, extravagant construction that had equestrian statues on it and other adornments. So this was presenting the public face of the regime, that the two of them were coming together to oversee their father's funeral, but also his consecration, his deification as Divus Severus, and that was really important for their own position as well.
But the text really makes clear, well, especially Dio, how much of a rivalry there was at this point, doesn't it?
Very much so. Dio says Caracalla makes no bones about the fact that he wants to get rid of Geta. And it's quite interesting is that given how much Caracalla later on tries to win over the support of the army and portray himself as a fellow soldier, we're told the soldiers were actually in favour of Geta at this time. Mm. So Geta always has a bodyguard, athletes around him as well who are going to protect him.
Part of it was a physical resemblance to Septimius Severus, wasn't it?
Yes, yes.
So he was a darling of the army as well. You look at him, you see his father through him.
Yeah, and Caracalla really couldn't afford to have the army's loyalties go towards his younger brother.
Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, he was the older brother, but there was no official law of primogeniture in the Roman Empire, so the army could decide who was going to become the next emperor. Cassius Dio says, in all that they did, they were diametrically opposed, and anyone would see that something terrible was bound to result from the situation. This is a bit of a contrast from some of the earlier descriptions in Dio in about sort of 205, 206, when the young men go around carousing together and enjoy the same sports.
Mm.
So it may be now that the question of the succession is up
for grabs. Stakes have changed.
Yeah. They're moving further apart. The ancient sources draw them as quite different characters, but in a stereotypical way. So Geta is studious and courteous, while Caracalla is harsh and savage. To what extent this is part of a later rewriting, we don't know. Certainly the stereotypes are very convenient. I think probably the fact that Caracalla, despite only being 1 year older, was constantly promoted ahead of Geta must have had a psychological impact on the younger brother and put a strain on their relationship.
Yeah.
So, you know, the idea of the heir and the spare in this kind of world. Think back to Titus and Domitian as well.
Marcus Aurelius.
And Lucius Verus.
Lucius Verus, yeah. To the extent where I actually called that Emperors of Rome episode Heir and Despair.
Heir and Despair, yes. Yeah. But they had a very good relationship. So that's really interesting that Marcus and Lucius genuinely worked together, despite them having quite different characters.
Mm.
But Caracalla and Geta, it seemed to be the start of fratricidal discord.
To the extent that, and I couldn't find the historical reference for this, but you'll maybe be able to clarify this, they physically divided the palace in two. Is that something that happened?
It's difficult to know, but yes, we do have stories that the palace was divided into two. I mean, it's a huge complex on the Palatine, so it is plausible they each would have had their own apartments, their own staff.
You have that side, I have this side, and staff stays separate and everything separate.
Yeah, I mean, there would have been ceremonies in which they probably would have come together, such as the everyday salutatio, where the Senate comes and pays its respects.
Mm.
But they probably would have had completely separate households with their own sort of secretaries of letters,
things like that.
I mean, we have other stories from Herodian that they wanted to divide the empire between the two of them. And Geta would sort of set up camp in Alexandria in Egypt or Antioch. We don't know whether that's true. It's probably not true. It's probably reading a lot into the situation. But certainly I think we can say it was a very tense time on the Palatine at the moment.
Julia Domna takes that proposition quite badly, doesn't she? You're ripping my family in half, to paraphrase her.
Yeah, I mean, Julia Domna has not had a easy life so far. You might remember that she was victimized by Plautianus for many years. Her husband has just died, and now her two young sons are at each other's throats.
Mm.
So she doesn't want to see the empire split up like that. And at this point of time, I really think it's inconceivable that that would actually happen.
Yeah, there's a concern that it would lead to a civil war if that did happen.
Very much so. I mean, we saw with Pescinius Niger when he's controlling Antioch and what problems that caused that Septimius Severus decided to march there first. You know, if in Antioch, Alexandria, you can control much of Rome's grain supply.
Yes, yep.
Can't see Caracalla giving that to Geta.
Yes, yeah. Plus it's Herodian.
Yes, it's Herodian, who's a great writer, but not always historically accurate.
We should probably say at this point.
I was going to ask. Yeah. Talk about Herodian.
Yeah, well, yeah, just as far as the sources are. Okay, we've got Dio Cassius. Shout out to Dio, but he does get very epitomised at this point. Not even epitomised, just really fragmentary. It's a bit of a mess, the Caracalla stuff.
Yeah, so we're really depending on later excerpts here written by Zephyrlinus and Zenarus's history as well. We have also some original excerpts which survives in the Byzantine period. Mm. That which survives is really valuable because Cassius Dio was a senator at this time, knew Caracalla, they had conversations. Mm. He wasn't a close associate, but, you know, they knew each other. What we have is really valuable. It's trying to piece it together in the correct order and, of course, realising that there's parts missing as well.
And meanwhile, we've got Herodian, who seems to be all there as far as all the content's there. And it's really dramatically and engagingly written. Mm. But a lot of the stuff that he talks about is never mentioned in Dio. So you're there going, okay, so who do I believe here? I want to believe the guy who's writing the thriller.
Yeah, and Herodian is a fascinating writer, precisely because we don't really know who he was. Mm. So he's probably writing in the 240s or 250s, so well after the Severan dynasty has all gone. He writes in Greek. He is a Greek. And he held some kind of imperial position. Now, there's been a lot of debate as to whether that's a freedman, whether he was an equestrian. He probably wasn't a senator. But he really doesn't insert himself into his history the way Cassius Dio does. Mm. It's an 8-book gripping narrative, really, of history after the death of Marcus Aurelius.
Yes.
Commodus, you know, Pertinax, Timius Severus, then the rest of the Severans, and it goes all the way up to AD 238, the gripping year of the six emperors.
And the other one that we've got, which we will barely mention in these podcasts, is the Augustan history, just because they become so unreliable at this point.
Yes. I've taken some facts from the Augustan history when they can be confirmed from other sources.
But it's like 10%.
The Caracalla life isn't too bad. Yeah. It's when you get up to Macrinus and Elagabalus that we get some problems there. I mean, there's some details that can be confirmed, but it becomes an increasingly problematic source. Mm. So we tend to go from Dio, Herodian, and then supplement with the Augustan history when necessary.
Okay, so but to wander back to my notes, the entire thing about splitting the empire, Geta being set up in Alexandria, Julia Domna being very distraught about it, that's purely Herodian. That's like a book of Herodian.
Yes, so Herodian devotes a lot of attention to what's going on here in the palace because he's interested in the personal drama.
He is very interested in personal drama.
Herodian writes in set narratives, and each narrative usually revolves around a couple of characters who really take centre stage. And here it's Caracalla, Geta, and the mum, Julia Domna.
I'm going to be so disappointed if this is just imperial fan fiction.
I don't think it's quite that bad.
we have to. The murder of Geta. Mm. Okay, let's kill off Geta.
Right, so we're in December of 211, so it's only really been 10 months since Septimius Severus has died. And so Caracalla has a problem in that Geta's always with his bodyguards. Mm. So how is he going to get rid of his brother? So he arranges a meeting, a peace meeting, if you will, with his mother, Julia Domna. Obviously, Geta can go in there unarmed because it's just the two of them and their mum. So Cassius Dio, 78.2, 3-4. Dio says, some centurions previously instructed by Caracalla rushed in a body and struck down Geta, who at a sight of them had run to his mother, hung about her neck and clung to her bosom and breasts, lamenting and crying, mother that bore me, help, I am being murdered. And so she, tricked in this way, saw her son perishing in the most impious fashion in her arms, and received him at his death into the very womb, as it were, from where he had been born. For she was all covered with his blood, so that she took no note of the wound she had received on her hand.
That's a really dramatic scene, that one. I mean, that's retold in Renaissance paintings and everything.
It's a stunning scene when, you know, the Emperor of Rome kills his co-emperor in his mother's lap. Mm. I mean, it's everyone's worst nightmare that the empire is being torn apart like this. And it's played out in such a personal fashion that, you know, he would kill his own brother without, you know, any support, without Geta really having done anything wrong, just because he wants sole rule.
And to actually carry out the deed yourself. Mm. We haven't had an emperor be that active an agent in something like this, I don't think.
No, I'm struggling to recall any emperor with that kind of
Emperors, you know, gave the order for people to be killed, and they might have killed people themselves, but their brother, and to have this level of agency and to assume that that you can get away with it.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, I can't think of any precedent for this kind of action. Mm. And one of the reasons why he gets away with it is that he claims that Geta was conspiring against him. Mm. So he has been saved from a conspiracy.
We'll get into that. Just interestingly, and massively nerdily, what translation are you using? I think I've got a much older one here, which says lines like, "Mother that dodst bear me, help, I am being murdered, into the very womb, as it were, whence he had been born." Mine feels like 1800s.
Yeah, no, that is the Kerry translation. I just adapted it on the fly.
Well done, because I noticed you dropped Caracalla in there as well instead of Antoninus.
So. Yeah, I mean the Greek is actually really interesting. It's mete, mete, mother, mother, tekusa, tekusa, you know, the one who bore me, one who bore me. The English actually changes the cry in a different way, whereas, you know, he actually said, mother, mother, you know, one who bore me, which is quite difficult to say in good English, but in Greek, when it's in one word, tekusa, tekusa, you can really hear that. And it goes, boethe, help, sphastomai, I'm being murdered. Everything's always better in the original.
that changes the entire tone. It sounds a lot more frantic and I am actually being murdered here.
Yes, a lot more to the point. Mother, mother.
I'm not doing a Shakespeare play.
Yes.
All right, how does Caracalla get away with it then?
Well, Caracalla knows he needs to get the soldiers on side. So the first thing he does is go to the Praetorian Guard, saying that it's a conspiracy and that Geta had conspired to kill him. And he says, according to Dio, "Rejoice, fellow soldiers, for now I am in a position to do you favours." He goes on and says, "I am one of you, and it's because of you alone that I care to live, in order that I may confirm upon you many favours, for all the treasuries are yours." Mm. And that's Dio 78.3, 1 to 2.
That's a very smart action, I suppose. The only one open to him is either go to the Senate or go to the army.
And he goes to the army first.
Yeah.
And he goes to the Senate later, but it's important to get the army on side. That is the pattern of Roman history as it's been established. He gives them a donative of 10,000 sesterces each, which is not the biggest that's been given, but it's a substantial amount.
Didn't I find the point that Pertinax gave them more money when...
Yeah, Pertinax gave them more money.
When he became emperor.
Yes.
And in the same sort of thing, you know, protect me, there's going to be people with knives coming after me.
Yes.
Here's some money.
Yes. Yeah, but Pertinax, he succeeds Commodus, who is a hated emperor, whereas Caracalla is already a member of the dynasty. So he already has that sort of dynastic legitimacy. And then after that, he goes to the Senate, gives the accusation of the conspiracy.
He essentially threatens them as well. I read that as a threat.
Yeah, no, definitely, because they're supporters of Geta among the Senate.
Mm.
We don't have all the details, but it's clear the Senate was divided at this time. So Caracalla defends his actions against Geta by referring back to our previous rulers of Rome who have done away with their brothers. So in Herodian, we have a speech from Caracalla, which is made up, but it's Herodian's way of getting into his psyche. And in this, Caracalla says, "After all, even Romulus, the founder of this city, did not stand for his brother simply making fun of his labours, not to mention Germanicus, the brother of Tiberius, Britannicus, the brother of Nero, or Titus, the brother of Domitian. Marcus himself, while professing his philosophy and humaneness, did not tolerate the arrogance of Lucius, his son-in-law, and got rid of him by a plot." Now, that's completely false. It's really just a rumour that Marcus Aurelius got rid of Lucius Verus.
It also implies that Nero got rid of Britannicus and that Tiberius got rid of Germanicus.
Yes, well, the Tiberius Germanicus, as we know, is a rumour that he got Piso, the governor of Syria, to poison Germanicus. I think it's pretty clear that Nero and Agrippina did get rid of Britannicus.
Oh, yes.
In order to make sure there was no other rivals to the throne.
Yeah, but it's interesting that he's calling back to those going, look, I'm completely justified in doing it because these previous emperors have done it.
Yes, it's like the litany of tyrants. But the Romulus precedent is really interesting because, you know, it harks back to the fact that Rome was built on a fratricidal action.
Mm.
Getting rid of Remus, that's why it's Roma, not Rima.
The Senate, I suppose, grudgingly go along with that at this point. He's the emperor. He's got the army behind him. We're going to have to accept that. But they also go along with a damnatio memori, an emperor that is so bad, somebody who is so bad that they need to be struck from the records. It's interesting that they apply that to Geta, that they go along with that. So
damnatio memoriae is actually a modern term. It's Latin. But
wow, really?
Yes, it's a made-up modern term.
It's biblical, isn't it?
We get some terms in Suetonius once we get abolitio memoriae, the abolition of memory, but damnatio memoriae is actually made up by modern scholars.
The modern term for an old concept,
yeah,
though.
Definitely, for an ancient practice.
Yep.
And this is that when someone has been condemned, and not only an emperor, it did happen to other people as well, when they're condemned by the Senate, their images were defaced, they were removed, their name was expunged from public records, so inscriptions, but also records on paper, papyrus as well. And this was a way of making sure that their memory did not live on. However, it also acts as a guarantee that their memory does live on, because you will see the erasures in inscriptions, or you'll see this used to be a statue of Geta and now there's Caracalla's head in there. So it's a way of forgetting, but also remembering that you're forgetting this particular person. It acts in a really interesting psychological way.
But it was rather extreme in the case of Geta, if I recall correctly. This is the most extreme example of this that we'll get.
Yes, the most extreme example of damnatio memoriae from antiquity.
Mm.
In terms of media, Geta's name, his image is obliterated from arches, from papyri, from inscriptions, from dedicatory altars, bronze inscriptions in the camp of the Wiggiles. Coins are melted down. It's clear that governors throughout the empire were instructed to remove his image in every way possible. So the most famous example of this is the Severan Tondo, which shows Septimius Severus, Julia Domna, and a young Caracalla and Geta.
So this is a painting.
It's a painting,
It's the earliest portrait that we've got of a emperor.
It's an earliest painting portrait.
Painting portrait, we
would say, as opposed
A relief or something.
A relief.
And it's in Germany, I want to say.
It's in Berlin, yes. So it's sometimes called the Berlin Tondo as well.
Mm.
Originally from Egypt, so it may have been in an administration building, much the same way we have portraits
like
of the
portrait
Queen today.
Of the Queen.
Yeah.
And this is quite striking, and people can look it up. So it's a painting of Septimius Severus and his family. So
yes.
Geta and Caracalla are young boys in this.
Yes.
But Geta has had his face scratched off.
Yeah, he's got his face wiped out. Everyone else is still there. They're smiling. They're bejeweled. They're in their robes. Caracalla looks quite angelic, I have to say, in this particular portrait. But there's just this brown space where Geta's face has just been rubbed off. So if anyone just wants to Google Berlin Tondo or Severan Tondo, it'll come up in your Google images search. It's probably the most memorable image of damnatio memoriae from the entire empire,
yes.
I would say.
But not just that. Most notably, I suppose, is the arch of Septimius Severus, where Geta's name is scratched off that.
That's right. So originally it was dedicated on the names of all three of them. So Geta's names, titles removed, and instead we get in the Latin, optissimis fortissimus quae principus, which means to the best and bravest princes or emperors. Mm. So Geta is removed, but it's okay. We can put some new titles in referring to Caracalla and Septimius Severus. Also, the Arch of the Argentarii, which is now in the Forum Boarium. It's in the cattle market, so if you go and see that in Rome.
Is that the Arch of the Bankers?
The Arch of the Bankers, yeah. So this was a private dedication from the bankers to the Severan house. It originally featured Septimius Severus, Julia Domna, Caracalla, Geta,
Plautianus
yeah. Yep, and Plautilla.
Yes.
So Plautianus and Plautilla were already removed, and now Geta gets removed as well.
It's like that photo of Marty McFly and his family in Back to the Future, how the characters keep fading out.
Yes,
his siblings keep vanishing, suddenly his brother's arm's gone, and yeah.
That's right. Actually, in this one, because Geta is removed, Julia Domna's arm is originally reaching around Geta, but then they have to put in this new arm, which looks rather awkward, to cover up the fact that, that Geta's no longer there. It's really quite striking. It's interesting that the Damnata Memoriae is also visible throughout the provinces, not only inscriptions, where, you know, that's the most visible sign of Damnatio, but also in coins. For example, the Greek cities in Asia Minor produced their own coinage, and they had produced many coins with facing busts of Caracalla and Geta. They still kept the coins in circulation, but they eradicated Geta's busts.
I've got a theory about why that is so extensive, though.
Okay.
Because Caracalla travels so much throughout the provinces in the rest of his reign. People go, oh, Caracalla's coming. Mm. Quick, hide the Geta.
Yeah.
And they might be doing it at that point. Or there might even be somebody traveling ahead of Caracalla's party going, okay, Caracalla's coming. Quick word about Geta. You might want to take these down, scrub these coins. And that's why it's so extensive throughout the empire.
I think, yeah, particularly in Asia Minor, because Caracalla travels through there. That's a really important point because he spends quite a considerable part of his reign there. So, you know, he doesn't want to be seeing people exchanging coins with his brother's image on them. But it was clearly also an imperial order. So the prefect of Egypt, a man called Bibius Iuncinus, also issues his own edict instructing people to remove Geta's name from public records. He says that he wants them to abolish all memory of the traitor, so that no public record of him remains.
Mm.
And in terms of papyri, which have emperor's names scratched out, the vast majority of them are papyri referring to Geta.
Yeah.
We do have other 3rd century emperors whose names are scratched out as well, but people didn't even want to have records in the archives with his name on it, the years he was consul, which really shows the fear that people had what would happen to them if they didn't carry out Caracalla's orders.
Mm. And the Damnatio Memoriae doesn't just go for physical objects, if I can put it rather bluntly that way. It also extends to anybody who was a supporter of Geta. So Caracalla really takes the opportunity to clear house.
Yes, yes. So Cassius Dio says he murdered 20,000 men and women in total.
That's just...
that's an exaggeration.
That's a Cassius Dio number, but still.
Well, all numbers in ancient historians are exaggerated. Now, it's interesting here that Xiphilinus, the Byzantine author who epitomizes Cassius Dio's history, says that Dio had originally given the names of people who had been killed, but Xiphilinus cut them out.
Because he said something like too numerous to...
They're too numerous to mention, yes. There weren't 20,000 names there, but we know that there was a purge of Geta's supporters so that Caracalla could be his own man. Herodian says, this is Herodian 4.6.1, Geta's friends and associates were immediately butchered together with those who lived in his half of the imperial palace. All his attendants were put to death too. Not a single one was spared because of his age, not even the infants. Mm. Their bodies, after first being dragged about and subjected to every form of indignity, were placed in carts and taken out of the city. They were piled up and burned or simply thrown in the ditch.
Yeah, I think it's a bit biblical.
Yeah, it's probably exaggerating children being put to death, you know, babies being murdered. But, you know, what the point is that there was a major purge of Geta's supporters and that Caracalla wants to clean house, particularly in the Senate and the administration in the Imperial Palace. And this is because he says that Geta was conspiring against him.
Mm.
So everyone else who supported him must be removed as well. This is what Xiphilinus says, Xiphilinus the epitomizer of Cassius Dio. Dio, because the slain were all very well known in those days, gives a list of their names. But for me it suffices to say that he made away with all the men he wished without distinction, both guilty and guiltless alike, and that he mutilated Rome by depriving it of all its good men.
That's Dr. Kaelin Davenport, Senior Lecturer in Roman History at Macquarie University, and you are listening to Emperors of Rome. If you like this podcast, you can subscribe to it in Apple Podcasts or your local friendly neighbourhood podcatching service. Please feel free to leave a review. You can follow the Emperors of Rome on Facebook, and you can follow both Kaelin and myself on Twitter. Kaelin is at Dr. C. Davenport. I am at Nightlight Guy, and the podcast is at Rome Podcast. In the next episode of Emperors of Rome, Caracalla gets down to the business of being emperor. He just interprets it a bit creatively. But until then, I'm Matt Smith. You've been fantastic, and thanks for listening.